This was a few sample, the bird and the rain and the gong from a weekend that I've spent in a cabin or house, I guess, in the middle of the mountain without cell reception, drinking cactus juice and crying a lot. You're listening to Evolution Revolution with DJ Demaru. And yeah, I just come out of a few days retreat where we drank juice of a cactus called Huachuma. Huachuma is a cactus from South America, and was it Portuguese, the Spanish name, I guess? It's San Pedro, or San being Saint Pedro, Peter, Saint Peter, being, the relation between the church and the psychedelic reality of South America is seen in different movement. San Pedro being one of them, and ayahuasca. The ayahuasca being a vine that, anyway, I won't get into the detail, but a psychedelic mixture of herbs from the jungle, and even the church drinking it realized that they could see God by drinking ayahuasca and started a cult or a small religion called the Santo Daime. So on one side, the Santo Daime was created through the Catholic Church in Brazil. San Pedro, there was nothing created around it, but it seems so that religious people, when drinking or eating the cactus, would experience some sort of spiritual awakening. To name a plant San Pedro, they had a bit of a reason for that. The original name Huachuma is what we use. I use generally. It's a cactus that contains mezcalito or mescaline, and it's a very gentle substance that I use to bring myself into a different perspective. And why would we go in a different perspective? Well, to look at my life in a different way, and then I can see patterns, or I can see things that arise from this different perspective, and from there I can take action in the process of healing or changing things. As we move through life, we tend to create a bit of a foundational reality around us to have comfort and a vision and a goal in life. So I find it's important to stay within a certain perspective of life. You know, you have a goal of monetary goal or a financial goal, I mean, or, you know, buying a house or buying a car, and you need to kind of stay focused in a certain direction in order to attain these goals. Once you attain some of these goals, once in a while, it's good to check in a little bit, have a different perspective, have a bit of a little shake up in our reality, so you can see your own life in a different way and say, oh, okay, this is good, and this is not so good. And Huachuma does the trick. It's a psychedelic, so like magic mushroom or LSD, you might find it that you know, that psychedelic perspective changes how you look at things. And the Huachuma is in the same similar vein, although I find it more gentle. There's you can actually resist it. You can block it a little bit. But the more you block it, the more uncomfortable it gets. And then whether you vomit or you feel a strong reaction to it mentally or physically. So it's a bit of a kind of a evolution pressure. You go with the flow or you go against it. But if you go against it, you have that tension that arises. And then when you release or open up, then something else happens. And during that retreat, Wachuma retreat, we did it quite differently. So the Wachuma ceremony comes from South America. They had a way to do it back then. And some people took these teaching and brought it over here in different ways. It's presented in ceremonial ways, and some are more psychoanalytic, where everybody talks about their problem, whatever comes out, and that sharing helps everybody to understand that we're all weave in the similar fabric. And this time we are small groups, and we were sharing not only our own experience but also some of our teachings. So most of us were practitioners of different healing heart. And we were able to share that during the weekend. So it was a quite different experience and very powerful. And that was a beautiful tool. I don't suggest people to do it. But if you feel the call, and if you feel sometime, I would say, stuck. And it's important to have some sort of practice of whether reflection, or if you have a coach or psychologist that follows you, or a yoga teacher, or somebody that you can process with. It's important. The plant will show or will make you see things in a different perspective. And in order to process it in a productive or creative way, sometimes it's good to have people around us to be, yes, I've seen that in you for all these years, and it's good that you see it now. Or not at all, you're totally mistaken, don't even try. So if you are to experiment with the psychedelic plant, I suggest that you have a bit of a community, a bit of support. If you have a psychologist that is following you, it's good to check in with them. Some of them are very open to the idea. Some of them don't like the idea, but most modern scientific and psychologists have a good idea of what the psychedelic could do, and in under kind of controlled environment, it can be very beneficial, as they are testing that as an end-of-life treatment as well, so people can become in peace with their own death. There's been a lot of research in New York using psilocybin, and it's not very celebrated by pharmaceutical, as the psilocybin is a very cheap product to produce, and normally the effect of psilocybin treatment lasts for months, if not years, if not a lifetime. So there's not a lot of money to be done in the psychedelic industry. Unfortunately, it has a life-changing experience, and therefore I don't see a lot of people wanting to invest in something that is so cheaply created and so deeply transformative. That being said, I wanted to continue this week with my talk on my research, my exploration of the concept of spiritual martial art, if I want to call it, or spiritual warfare, spiritual technique that helps protect and maybe counterattack, but to use pragmatically spiritual practices in our daily life. So how to use meditation and yoga and other practices like that, more like a martial art than just a practice of awakening. So I've started a few weeks ago with the Christian view of spiritual warfare. I talked about the Book of War, The Art of War with Sun Tzu in the second week. Last week I started on the Zen and martial art from Taisen Deshimaru. And I continued within that book during the last week just to check in a little further with that book, as it's quite relatable to meditation and martial arts. So I think it's good to... I'm just going to review a few other parts. And this research is not an extensive research in that subject. It's just a introduction of what could it feel like, sounds like, taste like to use spiritual practices in a more of a martial art way. And I invite people to look into the text that I suggest, or the different reading, and do your own interpretation, your own research, all the text. I find it's important to have a personal connection with the text, and reading as many translation or analyze of a text is important. Text like the Art of War or the Tao Te Ching, or things that old text really benefit if you can read different translation in a different language. Anyway, more on that after one of the funniest song that reminds me of high school from Gong. This was Gong. Gong and the Putthead Pixies. Yeah, I don't know what to say. I really enjoy Gong back in the days. And yeah, I have no idea who they are, where they're coming from. Again, probably just browsing through vinyls at the store back in my high school days and finding some weird shaped spaceship sort of album covers and being like, that's probably fun. And yeah, that's where my story with Gong started. And yeah, it's Gong, some of their album anyway, talks about lost civilization and you know, other world where technology, where two powerful humans whether left the planet or ended up not surviving their own technology. The lost world of Atlantis. You're listening to DJ Damaru with Evolution Revolution, and today I'm continuing on the story or the concept of spiritual warfare. And why am I talking about that? I just see in my own world, meditation and yoga has been a life-changing experience. It's been the foundation of my own life. I use it at all the sauce. It's not about being seated in meditation posture for 2 hours a day. It's something that I live throughout my day and throughout my life. It's a skill that I would hope that everybody develop at one point or another. It's I find it kind of very important tool, and I think it can be used for many things. And a few years ago, I was researching in spiritual activism, and that's a very kind of very short short story of spiritual activism. It's not something that's been used a lot, and a lot of these a lot of that spiritual activism is related to South American women who are bridging these two concepts. It doesn't have a lot of foundation, in a sense that it's rare to see these two words together, spiritual activism, and even more rare to see spiritual warfare. And it's not very applicable to day-to-day's activity. I mean, we often see meditation, a spiritual activity, to be about being peaceful and not non-violent and not using these to change the society around us. But for me, how I came to spiritual warfare, it's a lot because I've studied marketing, and I work in marketing somehow, in communication, and seeing how marketing and communication has been somewhat weaponized toward the consumer, toward the listeners, toward the population at large, and seeing the effect that it has on my mind. You know, it's not anymore just to be selling stuff and making money, but really to create social movements on the larger scale. And you know, when you study marketing or when you just look at the reality that we live in, you can see that these marketing techniques are used in movies, they're used in the news, they're used in politics, and they're used in corporation, they're used in all aspect of life. They're used for selling drugs or selling cars or selling anything to you. So when I see this kind of front of marketing that is used throughout a different media channels, I started to feel that I need to protect myself. I need to first be aware that there is an agenda behind a lot of the medias, and this is creating a belief system that might not be aligned with my health or my well-being. So if something goes against my well-being, I could consider that as some sort of an attack on my system. So if some ideas, some concepts are pushed and it's not for my own good, it's for the profit of others, then I consider that to be an attack. And it's hard to defend against something that is omnipresent, like medias and social medias and movies and news and politics. You can, you know, be an activist and move against these mass media and such. But it's very important to be self-aware and, you know, protecting yourself at that level as well of where you get your news from and how do you receive all of that media. And meditation is directly affected for me in my world. It's directly affected by what I consume on the media sphere. If I go on social network and some ideas are presented there and it makes me spin in my head for days, it's really hard to sit and meditate. And I was like, oh, okay. I've been affected negatively in my own mind, my own energy. And that has taken me a few days to heal from it. And the way I was, you know, experiencing it, it was like it's as if I was has been attacked. And in marketing, you know, you want to get under people's skin a little bit. You want to kind of trigger emotions. You want to do association between childhood trauma and some, you know, product. So, you know, hey, you that has a childhood trauma, we won't solve your problem, but you should be getting this or that. And so this kind of abuse of human psychology is all around us. And, you know, in the 70s and 80s, they really started on the communication theory with McLuhan. If you read the Medium is the Message, you'll see that the psychology of communication has grown quite a lot. And that the power that the communication system have on our own mind is really big. And, you know, when you're seeking happiness, it's important to be aware that the marketing is a very deep, a very powerful machine. And I feel that it kind of has won the fight toward with the human mind, that we've developed techniques that are more powerful than any human could defend from if you are unaware and not actively, proactively being conscious and being, you know, in that state of awareness. So that's why I'm talking about spiritual warfare, is to be able to protect yourself, to be able to defend yourself, to be able to create a foundation of tools and practices and understanding in order to do what you need to do with your life. So it's a hacker digest of what meditation can do for you, not in a penetration or attack and defense security view, but a hacker in that perspective of you know, making things do or work the way you want them to work. So yeah, this is a big part. And, you know, I've studied a few books and I'm kind of just bringing back some books that I've read previously to observe them in a perspective with that understanding of spiritual warfare. And one of the book is The Zen and Martial Art from Taisen de Shimaru. Taisen de Shimaru was a student of Kodo Sawaki, a great Zen master, Japanese Zen master. And Taisen de Shimaru, I know about him because he traveled to France and opened a few dojo in France and had one dojo in Montreal. I think he still have that dojo in Montreal, very close to where I lived and very close from where I worked as well. And so I had the opportunity to study there. Taisen de Shimaru, through his book and the way he talks, there's a... he's a little pompous or a little proud, a little, it's an interesting way to read. He's not, this gentle, spiritual guide. He's a little, I'm the best. And, we used to have masters and now there's no more master. I'm probably the last Zen master there is. And now everybody wants to do things quickly. So, through his teaching, through his books, you can feel that. And meditating with a few monks in Montreal, I had different experience like that as well, of like this pride. One of the teacher was talking about himself in the third person. I couldn't understand why he was doing that. But he was saying things like, oh, if you would ask... Paul something, I can't remember his name. If you would ask this man, what does he think about this? Well, he would answer. And then he would just talk like that all the time in a third person. I'd never met someone talking in a third person. And if you're sitting in a meditation and you hear that for the first time, it was a funny experience. And this teacher was calling the basho, the stick that they use in Zen to hit on the student. And I was, oh, let's try this new experience. I'm always open to new experience. And the person holding the stick was a very pretty Zen monk. And I was like, why not? Being beaten by a stick from a very pretty Zen monk. It was fun. I had a lot of fun there. It was interesting. Anyway, so that's my experience with Taisen de Shimaru lineage in a dojo in Montreal. I went there many times. It's something that... a lineage that I really liked how... it was different and... it was a powerful learning. So I've continued to read about Taisen de Shimaru and his teachings, and he has a few books. The book on Zen is really powerful for a French translation, and the Zen and Martial Art is exactly in the field of what I'm looking into right now. The book is more about how to bring spirituality in martial art, but I think it's also... you can reverse it and apply how to use martial art with your spirituality. It's not a subject that I find quite discussed about, but I'd like to resurface as much as I can. Let's move into a bit of music. Fortet, their latest album, 3, with a song called Skater. This was Fortet with their album 3, the song called Skater. You're listening to DJ Demaru with Evolution Revolution, talking today about spiritual warfare. I'll be talking about this subject for a long time, as it has become a little bit of how I see a spiritual practice and how it can be used in day-to-day life, not only to help creating happiness and wealth and health, but also being aware of the things that brings you down, these kind of different attacks that might be happening from people around you, or medias, the work, the environment, the pollution, or things like that. And there's a lot of correlation between martial art and spirituality. And for me, it has become a bit of a second nature as I'm reviewing these books and reviewing my own life as well. I started martial art when I was in my teenage years, so I've always been attracted to everything that had to do with martial art. And at the same time, I've been practicing a little later. I started yoga and meditation, but I started meditation quite a long time before yoga. I think I've been to a Zen dojo before starting martial art, and then anyway, it's all kind of meddled together. It's all mixed in together. When I was a teenager, like, it was very close to each other. And I remember when I started doing yoga, how it affected my martial art. I was like, wow, yoga actually like boosted my martial art skills. And my meditation was helping yoga, and yoga was helping martial art, and all of that was helping me in my life to be more sensitive to. And I think it saved my life multiple times to have that awareness and that power. So anyway, reviewing this idea of spiritual warfare brought me back into a lot of my martial art learning, and me realizing that it's always been all part of my own understanding and my own reality. So I'm looking into Taisen Deshimaru here, the Zen and martial art, and he talks about the secret of Budo, the secret of Zen, and he talks about the Kendo samurai, and wanted to understand the depth of the secret of Kendo. And he went to see the Achinam is a Buddha that's kind of a cross in between Shintoism and Buddhism, and he's referred often as the god of war somehow, and martial art artist kind of connect with that god. So he went to see that god, or Bodhidharma and Bodhisattva, asking about the secret. And of course, that's something that I've learned through my practices. When you go to a temple, when you go to a ceremony, when you go to a deity, if you go to some sort of a altar or a statue, and then you ask for guidance, and you're like, please Kuan Yin, please Buddha, please whoever you want, help me understand something X, Y, Z. And the secret of that is that it's not going to come up like, you're going to hear it in your head, you're going to see it in your mind or something like that. Maybe it will happen like that. I'm not saying this is the only way. What I'm saying is, for me, how it often happens, if I need guidance, if I need something, and I go to a temple, I go to a sacred place, I go to a forest or something like that, the answer normally doesn't come at the moment where I'm asking. I just put it out there, and normally the answer comes in a little later in the day, or right after leaving that place, or a little moment and there's a relation between what I ask for and who I ask for, or who I ask it to, and the answer that comes in. So in that story that Tyson DeChemaux is saying, he has this samurai going to see the Bodhisattva, a statue of it, asking for the secret of Zendo, and the Budo, sorry. And then when he comes back from the temple, something attacked the samurai, and without thinking, the sword came out and defeated whatever attacked the samurai. And on that moment, he realized this idea that the secret is this action without the thoughts. And that's, you know, what we practice toward, is that when we meditate and practices, the idea is this almost automatic reaction, so that there's no reflection about, oh, here's an attack. Oh, I'm being attacked. Oh, I should defend. What should I do for defending? Maybe I'll take my sword, or maybe I'm going to jump to the left, or maybe I'm going to do that. And that thought process, you know, slows you down. Therefore, in martial arts, you don't have the time for that. So this dance that you can move before the music, or just right on top of the music, has to be without your thinking mind. And in Zen, that's also where you want to, where you're aiming to go, this place where the mind is not at the center of the process, that the mind, you know, it's there. The mind is always around, but it's not what controls the momentum. So that's something to, you know, to think about when in a place where you want to defend yourself, or you want to be in a fight. It's that the mind cannot be what control the action. And this is more of a kind of the secret type of thing. So it's not like, oh, you want to be in that state to start with. It's where you would aim toward, where you start realizing that you're defending without noticing. You're just already in the action. It's like, oh, my mind did not have to do that. So that's more of a, you know, where the secret would go. But where to start? And in another chapter, Tyson DeChemaux talks about the here and now. And that's what's interesting, I find, is like, it's when you look at spiritual warfare, it's not about, you know, these weird concepts that nobody ever heard about, that, you know, you go and, you know, take the hair of your enemy and put it in the blood of a sacrificial goat or something like that. It's the very foundational practice of meditation and yoga and other martial arts that are your most important tools. And in order to be successful in practicing spiritual warfare, is to be successful in these very basic skills. And he described this idea of here and now to be, by bringing the mind, the body, to the here and now, this is where you can accumulate energy. And if you look at what we are invited to do with our lives, it's normally not invited to do it in the here and now. So by having this idea that in order to be able to accumulate energy, it's to be able to center here and now, it really contrasts with everything that is offered out there that is normally not here, not now. It's in the future. It's about attaining some goal. It's about, you know, accumulating wealth. It's about being distracted. It's about entertainment. It's about not thinking about the here and now. Pretty much everything in our culture is built around not being here nor now. So it's, I find it interesting that this is also the kind of a process by which you can accumulate energy is to be in this here and now. I know it sounds very simple, and that's what I find kind of interesting. It's not like these are secret of like, wow, they're just like very basic ideas and concept about meditation and spirituality that are the foundation of being able to observe, sense, and protect yourself from things that might be negative to your life. James Holden with his album, Imagine This Is a High Dimensional Space of All Possibility. Let's listen to the song, Infinite Fade Out. This was James Holden with the album Imagine. This is a high-dimensional space of all possibilities. Sounds pretty cool. With the song called Infinite Fade Out. Now, it's not infinite, but it's pretty good. You're listening to DJ Damaru, Evolution Revolution. I've been researching, talking, writing, reading about what does it mean to think about spiritual warfare, how to apply it, and how can it be useful. We often see spirituality as a feel-good technique, and not much more than that. Some people have harnessed the spiritual practice of meditation and other visualization for businesses. And of course, when you do martial art, the practice of meditation can make your skill a lot greater by creating a lot of presence and relaxation and awareness, as well as observing the enemy and sensing when you get attacked. And on many levels, meditation can boost your martial arts skills. And when, as I'm observing the marketing of the world into our mind and how it can makes me not well, I'm like, oh, okay, so the world around me is making me feel unhealthy. And therefore, there's something coming from the outside that is perturbing me. And then how can I see, how can I feel, how can I dodge these attacks? So I'm studying this week the Zen and martial art from Taisen Deshimaru, and just going through some quote from the book and inviting you to check out his writing. He wrote in French, or translated in French, but he probably have English translation as well. And he talks about life and death at the end of that book, and talks about consciousness, and he talks about how if the mind is perturbated, if the mind is foggy, the natural function, I'm doing a translation as I'm reading, so it might sound a little weird. If the mind is confused, the functions of the body and are confused as well. If the mind is calm, then the body can act spontaneously. So talking about the body-mind relationship and how when you calm the mind, the body can actually be more acting on its own. And he talks here, pertain mostly with martial art, where, you know, when you're in a fight and if you're not thinking, if you're not in your mind, the body can act by itself. I use a similar technique when I offer a massage or a Thai massage. It's to get out of the mind and let the body feel what needs to be done, feel what needs to be healed. And my body knows. And when my body touch another body, there is this wisdom, that understanding that two body can actually help each other. So this mind, calming the mind in order to let the body act on. It's also a technique that you could observe when you are very sensitive to your body. So we have triggers, we have emotional triggers in our life. And if we are able to not have the mind interfere, you can hear a lot from your body. You can use the wisdom of your body in order to feel an attack and also how to defend from it. And I find that in our culture, we don't put much information. We kind of make fun of people, you know, when we talk about gut feeling and things like that. It's like, nah, you shouldn't follow that. And we deprive people from their own understanding of the body and of our wisdom. So again, in spiritual warfare, this calming of the mind in order to be able to listen to our body and to let the wisdom of the body do its thing, it's a very important step in martial art and in daily life. So tomorrow I'll be leading a meditation and I'll use some of these ideas to go within these concepts. And finally, one last thing in that book, The Zen Martial Art. Next week, I'll be looking into a different book, but he talks about the energy, the sexual energy in human being, and that's something I find is quite under attack in our culture, in our North American culture, with the prevalence of pornography and how it's not controlled at all. It's just everybody has access from a very young age to a very old age, and there's not much discussion about what potential or what damage that can be done onto the body. It's also overly used, the sexual energy, for marketing and how you get triggered and bring into consumption and other ideas through the sexual energy. So that is that for me for today. Time wise, I could be talking for another hours, but I'll thank you for listening. This is DJ Damaru, Evolution Revolution, every Tuesday, 1600 UTC. Thanks again.